Garrett Edgington of the Palouse Football League. Actually, excuse me, the Evergreen Football League on the air. Jared, how are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Okay, yeah, this is going to be this is going to be sort of weird because we're doing this as a three-way caller, trying to use our technology at hand in order to make this happen. So we'll see how it goes. All right, Jared, how are you doing today?
Oh, not too bad. And yourself?
Oh, I probably could be a little bit better right now, but we got something going. So let's talk quickly about you. I know you said you only have a couple minutes to do an interview. We'll talk real quickly. You were a player for semi-pro football, and you played for who?
I played for the Spokane Nightmare 4 years ago.
Okay. That was an eternity ago, man.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, if somebody were to go to evergreenfootballleague.com, they'd get a chance to see a photo of Jared. And you'd look at this guy and go, that guy was a football player? Come on. So tell me, what's the difference between minor league football and semi-pro?
Really, it's just what you decide what you want to call it. It's essentially the same thing, but the thing we run into is we do have some college kids that play ball as well, and if you throw in the tagline semi-pro football, then it assumes that they're getting paid, which would affect their eligibility, so that's why we pretty much just go by minor league, because our players are not allowed to be paid.
Okay, and that makes sense. Because I was noticing recently that I've been reading minor league versus semi-pro. Okay, so the EFL was started in 2004, but the first season was 2005, correct?
Correct, yeah. We took a year to get the league going, get everything set up and running. So that's why it took a little – we didn't get started until the actual 2005 season.
Okay, now – this area, Eastern Washington and North Idaho, used to be served by the Inland Northwest Football League, and that league is no longer around, and actually some of the teams in the EFL were in the Inland Northwest Football League. Why a new league when there already was one in the area?
Well, the best way to say it is that league was not being ran properly for the way it should have been. And I actually coached with the Palouse Thunder that year and kind of started tossing around the idea of starting up a league and running it the way it should be. And all the teams basically left that league and joined us.
All right. And then so the league has been prospering since its foundation?
Yeah, third year. You know, we started off with, you know, six teams added two, and then this year we added another one, so we're up to nine teams, and it's going strong.
Okay, and that last team was the Columbia Basin Riverhawks?
Correct.
Okay, and then I know Wenatchee Valley Rams are one of the newer teams, not one of the original six. What's the other non-original six?
Not original six is the State Line Miners.
Okay. So they and the Wenatchee Valley Rams are the new teams, as well as Columbia Basin Riverhawks?
Correct.
Okay. So I was noticing on the website there's this new organization called the Greater Northwest Football Association. What is that about?
Basically, there are several self-proclaimed national championship games in minor league football. And we'll be honest that, honestly, you know, we to travel with your complete team that got you your league championship to go across the country and play a game, you know, it's not really feasible. So what we did is we created a new association, and we're keeping it more regional to where our league, the Oregon Football League and the Pacific Northwest Football Conference got together and formed this association to where we can have the league champions play each other for a regional title, which is more realistic, especially with travel and expenses. And if I didn't have enough to do, myself and Mark Meadows from the PNFC got together and started this about 6 months ago.
Okay, and you'd mentioned on the website that there was actually originally talk of a merger between the two leagues. Is that still on the table?
No, they've decided that they want to pretty much do their thing. They're happy with they were at that time were having some problems with the ownerships of their league and have since removed those people that were creating the problems, and they're pretty happy with what they have now. So they're going to stay intact as a league, and then we've got interleague games going preseason-wise and then also during the season when we have bye weeks. So they'll stay on that side of the mountains, and we'll be over here.
Okay. So we have the football league starting up in the end of March, beginning of April. Is that correct?
Yeah, March 31st will be the first regular season game. And I believe we have preseason games starting as early as March 3rd.
Okay, and what are the areas where EFL football could be seen?
Well, we got a team right here that several of those, the Plus Thunder. Spokane has a team, as well as Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Then you have Walla Walla, Tri-Cities, Wenatchee, Yakima, Okanagan, and Moses Lake.
Okay, and that would be the Columbia Basin team.
Yes.
Now the Tri-City Knights have been dominating pretty much the EFL. Why is that?
A combination of good coaching, good players, and Scott Biglin at quarterback.
And do you see any end to that kind of streak anytime soon?
Well, Scott Biglin retired. He got beat up pretty good last year. He had a few injuries and decided it was time to hang it up and concentrate on his teaching job as well as his coaching. He coaches football for Southside High School, or Southridge, excuse me. So one can say, well, with Biglin gone, does that mean that, you know, the king is dead? Well, we'll definitely find out on March 31st when they play against Wenatchee the first game.
And Wenatchee is a pretty strong team, if I understand correctly.
Oh, yeah. They're a very, very strong team, very well coached, coached by Paul Preston, who's been coaching football for over 50 years. I guess you could call him the Joe Paterno of the EFL. yeah, they're looking to be just as strong, if not stronger, this year. And, you know, they had an upsetting overtime loss to the Blue Mountain Stars in the playoffs, and they're hungry. They want to get that game back.
And the Blue Mountain Stars out of the Walla Walla area?
Correct.
Okay. Now, what kind of things do you have planned for the EFL this year as far as maybe new awards, new things that you guys are going to be doing to add excitement to the games, get more information out to the fans, and try to recruit new fans?
Well, we're going to be, first of all, doing something we've never done before, is we're going to try and work with the athletic directors of all the local high schools, find the players that are coming out of high school that may not be going off to school and want to continue playing. We also are going to continue with the marketing aspect, trying to, you know, develop awareness. One thing that we've had to battle is because of that previous league, it pretty much hurt us in some large areas. Spokane, namely, and so we're still trying to show that this is a legitimate league. So we're going to continue working on that. And then awards-wise, I think we're going to pretty much what we had last year, we're going to stick with. We don't want to get too award crazy where you just show up, play football, and end up with an award. It kind of takes the meaning away.
Sure. And one of the awards is for the lineman, the Wally Bigelow Award.
Yes.
Named after our own Palouse Thunder's Wally Bigelow.
Yes.
I think that's a really cool tribute to Wally Bigelow. There's a quote in the October edition of the Evergreen Football League's newsletter talking about how Wally, he's a 42-year-old guy living out his dream, playing day in, day out with guys, 20 years younger than he is, getting beat around and being one of the best gentlemen out there on the field. I mean, he'll beat your brains and then he'll help you back up only to do it again. And at that time, I was playing for the Thunder in 2004, same year he was, and I was living over in Seattle at the time, driving over for all the games. And every time I showed up in the locker room, Wally would come up to me and, you know, thank me for making the drive over and everything like that. And it was just great guy to be around and a great guy to have on the team. A lot of enthusiasm in the game. And his opportunity to score a touchdown in his final game, I think, was just really awesome.
Yeah, except for his end zone dance, we still laugh at him about that. it was the exact reason why. Forgive me for saying this. Exactly why the fat guys aren't allowed to score touchdowns.
Well, here's
he'll
the
never
thing.
Be remembered for that.
Have you ever heard the whole, you know, like if somebody scores a touchdown and they make a big deal about it, you say, act like you've done it before. You know, in Wally's case. He was acting like, well, no, he wasn't acting like he had it done it before because he had never done it before. That was his first. So,
yes, it was. It was a classic moment. I was extremely happy for him. You know, Wally is one of the greatest men I've ever known. He's exactly what football is about. Go out there, smack you in the mouth, brush you off, and at the end of the game, he'll take that and buy you a beer.
Exactly.
he's a great guy.
So the Evergreen Football League is, you know, you got nine teams now. Probably 40 players, give or take, per team. So, you know, you got around 350 people or so throughout the Evergreen Football League from all walks of life, anywhere from just out of high school to, you know, reliving their high school years or reliving their college years or doing something they regret they hadn't done as a young person. So this league is for anybody. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it is, and exactly what our tagline is, real men, real football, you know. We obviously would like to have players be promoted onto the upper leagues and stuff. I mean, that would be great, but, you know, this league is mainly for the guys who just love the game of football and don't want to quit playing. You look at the numbers, what is it, one in 1,000 players in college actually make it to the NFL. I mean, those numbers are staggering, so... This is a game, you know, this league is for the blue-collar workers. You know, we have doctors, lawyers, firefighters, cops, students, you name it. They play in this league, and so that's pretty much what this league is for, is for the blue-collar guys who just want to go out and have a good time.
Okay. Once again, they can reach the Evergreen Football League's website at evergreenfootballleague.com. I know I'm pretty much out of time with you, Jared, and I appreciate you coming on the show. Once we get into the season, I'd love to get a chance to talk to you a little bit more about the kinds of stuff actually going on in the games. And one of the things that you've been doing is putting up your predictions for each week, and I believe you actually do a really good job at that. So,
yeah, 27-5 last season.
That's a great record right there. I mean, most ESPN analysis don't even get that good. So.
Yeah, I would be able to tell you this. After the first 2 weeks of the season, we're going to have a good idea of how the playoff fixtures are going to form. That's for certain.
All right. Well, once again, Jared Edgington, the CEO and co-founder, co-commissioner of the Evergreen Football League. Thank you, Jared.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. So... Through all the adversity, we actually got the interview done. I'm happy about that. If I sounded sort of strange talking on the air like that, unfortunately, I had about a one-quarter second delay in my headphones to my voice to talking. So I was talking and hearing myself talk. And when I would start saying anything more than like about five words, you know, it's like all of a sudden it's totally repeating in my head. And I'll tell you what. I can understand why people who aren't used to that really get confused by it. You hear it on a lot of radio shows. Somebody will be talking and they'll hear themselves and they'll just totally get lost in what they're saying. It's really strange. Once again, Jared Edgington, Evergreen Football League. This is the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM. You can reach their website at www.evergreenfootballleague.com. Information about all the different teams. Once again, we got the Okanagan County Commandos, Yakima Mavericks, Spokane Sabercats, State Line Miners, the Palouse Thunder, the Blue Mountain Stars, the Tri-City Knights, the Wenatchee Valley Rams, and the Columbia Basin Riverhawks. Stay tuned for the favorite of the PES. The Reverend Horton Heat. And we'll be back with all sorts of other fun stuff, too. Talk to you soon. The PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, and that was the Reverend Horton Heat. Intramurals have a whole bunch of fun stuff coming up. For instance, the self-directed triathlon. The signups are now through February 7th. The triathlon will take place on February 9th. Entry is free. Co-ed intertube water polo. That should be lots of fun. Signups are now through February 7th. Play begins February 9th. It's $15 a team. There's a wiffle ball tournament. Signups also are through February 7th. Games start February 9th, and that's $15 a team. Indoor tennis tournament, February 6th through the 21st. Our signups, February 23rd is game time. It's $3 for singles, $5 for doubles. The Northwest Regional Basketball Tournament. Early registration is between January 16th and February 22nd. Early registration fees are $210. Late registration is February 23rd through the 27th. And the late entry fee is $240. Play is on March 3rd. For more information, go to the WSU Intramural website at urec.wsu.edu/im. Pullman High School, J.T. Levenseller, quarterback, led the Pullman Greyhounds to a state championship last year against Archbishop Murphy over in the Tacoma Dome. He led his team to a 23-2 record over the last two seasons. He's going to be a Coug. WSU is bringing him in as a quarterback in 2008. Originally, he was being offered a place as a receiver, but he was interested in being a quarterback. He will be doing a gray shirt season. During the time that WSU was looking at maybe making him a receiver, Eastern Washington University was actually offering him a scholarship as a quarterback. So I guess it's lucky that we changed our direction and we're picking him up. So that should be exciting to see a local kid playing Cougar football. Unfortunately, we had a very heartbreaking overtime loss against number 7 Oregon at Friel Court on Saturday. Final score of 74-77. Derek Lowe scored 37 of those points. Unfortunately, Aaron Brooks for Oregon, coming off a one-day suspension against the Huskies, scored 31 points, which really he was unstoppable out there. He was really good. Cougars did not have much of an answer for Aaron Brooks, unfortunately. He was all over the place. The one thing I was noticing during the game, and some of the people I was with we talked about a little bit, and looking at the statistics later on, it really was showing this. We were noticing WSU's not getting under the hoop. WSU's not driving. They're not getting in there. They're taking perimeter shots. They're taking a lot of perimeter shots. And what I found was WSU actually shot 29 three-pointers. They made 11 of them. So they were shooting about 37, almost 38%. Their normal field goal shots, they shot 61, made 25, so they got a 41% there. So their percentage-wise, they were about in the ballpark of what they would normally do percentage-wise, but the number of three-pointers was extremely high. As a matter of fact, of all the games this season, that was their second highest number of three-pointers shot. The highest number was 30, so this was only one less. And that was against number 7 at the time, number 7, Arizona. So the question is, when we play against a really good team, do we have the guys that can actually drive in a lot and make those shots? It's almost like once we're playing a team like that, we have to shoot these perimeter shots, which are definitely a lower percentage than our than going up with the layups and whatnot. So it was pretty interesting to see the number of three-pointers we attempted in the game. And granted, a couple of those three-pointers were right at the very end of the game when we really needed to go for it, and it was an OT game and everything, so that added a little bit more time for the opportunities for the additional threes. But once again, the fact remains, we weren't able to get underneath. We weren't able to drive a lot. Offensively, we only had 8 rebounds the whole game. One thing I noticed, and I pointed out to the people I was with, and I get frustrated with this, not just in this game, but in a lot of the games, the Cougars don't seem to do a lot for offensive rebounds. I've seen so many times where a guy goes for the shot, half the team's already running down to the other side, the guy doesn't even follow up his own shot, and the other team gets an uncontested rebound. And I don't know, maybe that's the game plan. They figure, let's worry about defensive rebounds and not worry about offensive rebounds. And, we get some. Obviously, we got 8 this last game, but it seems to me that we should be able to do better than 8. There was several times where we'd actually have guys nearby, and they weren't even fighting to get a rebound. And like I said, maybe that's the game plan. I don't understand, but I would like to think that if we'd gotten more than 8 offensive rebounds, we might have been better off in this game against Arizona. Don't do drugs. Marijuana's bad for you, all right? This is the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. And an apology goes out to my man, Jared Edgington. I guess he's no longer the co-commissioner of the Evergreen Football League. He is the commissioner. I was looking at an old document that said he was a co-commissioner. So there you go, Jared. You got all the props you deserve. We were talking about the WSU versus Oregon basketball game. I would love to get a chance to talk to one of the football players or coaches and find out why it is that we don't get the offensive boards that I think we should be getting. And who am I anyway? I'm just some fans in the stands. And like I said, they probably have some sort of game plan that I know nothing about. We're getting near the top of the hour. Jerry Lima of the Palouse Thunder ought to be calling in. We also, a couple things that I'm working on. Glenn Johnson, mayor of the city of Pullman, will be on the air next week. We have a couple other political issues. I'd like to spend some time before I get into the issue just asking people in general to get an opinion if it's ever okay to discriminate on the basis of race under any circumstances, and see what people have to say about that, because I have an article where somebody's arguing it is okay to do that in certain circumstances. So I'd like to sort of compare and contrast some alternative points of view on this one and see where people go with it. The city of Moscow, before we get to Jerry Lima and the Palouse Thunder, we'll probably be closer to 1 o'clock on that. The city of Moscow, just on a side note, has decided not to try to stop the development of the Hawkins development over in the mall. Not the mall, but the corridor. The city of Moscow had They had their opportunity to appeal or to put in an appeal expire on them, and no appeal was put in. So the city of Moscow is either getting the message or they're going to try to save their appeal for the James Toyota moving out of their city and giving us all their tax revenues. I talked about this a little bit last week, but I'd like to talk a little bit more about it. Why does the city of Moscow care what we do in Whitman County? The short answer is money. It's all about money. You can listen to what the mayor says and how she tries to claim it's about all these noble causes, but the bottom line is money, very much so. So anyway, there was a letter to the editor that I actually happened to write, and it was published in the Daily Evergreen a couple days ago on the very back page, or right near the very back page. Unfortunately, that letter was about one quarter of the size that I actually originally wrote. When I sent it in, I know the Daily Evergreen has their standard of 250 words or less. And, you know, I knew after I'd gone to almost 2 pages that I'd gone well beyond that 250 words. But I went ahead and sent it in anyway. And they said, you know, you need to shorten this up just a hair. And I'm like, well, you know, the points I'm trying to make, there's nothing I can do to shorten out a lot of the points I want to make. I essentially have to just get rid of points that I want to make. And in lieu of doing that, and as important as this issue is right now, would it be okay if this was looked at as a guest column versus a letter to the editor? I got a response a couple days later saying, well, we're actually planning on doing a staff editorial on such this topic, and because of that, we don't really want to have a second editorial on such topic, but we're willing to put a letter to the editor in. So I pretty much went in there and hacked off, like I said, about 3/4 of the letter, 2/3 of the letter, something like that, and sent it back in, and sure enough, it was posted. So that was pretty cool. Another unrelated note, this is just an annoyance of mine, and I'd really like to share my annoyances with you because I like to do that. It makes me feel a little better. It's therapeutic. I have a neighbor who has a dog that barks all day long. Not necessarily all day long, only the hours that I'm up. How about that? It doesn't wake me up at night, so I can't complain about that. But the problem is that the guys who live there put their dog out during the day, and the dog barks constantly. Not for like a couple minutes, and then it stops for an hour and then barks some more. This is... As you start noticing something that really annoys you in the background, you can't stop noticing it. So the one day that I really was noticing this, I was watching my watch, and there was about at most a 45-second break in barking. So I had 45 seconds of peace at most, and the rest of the time there was dog barking. And the problem is that I actually work from home. I have an office, and... the dog is only two doors down, and I mean, I've tried to turn up my music. I've done a lot of things, but that dog has just this piercing bark. And after a while, you're sitting there trying to concentrate on something. You know, you're reading all these lines of code, trying to figure out why in the world your code's not working. Where's the bug? Where's the error in logic on my code here? And you sit there, and you work, and you work, and you work, and you can't figure out what the heck's going on. And then you got this dog barking, and it's just... It's like the fingernails on a chalkboard after a while. You're in the middle of thinking really and concentrating, and boom, this dog barks. Boom, this dog barks. Boom, this dog barks. And I'm really new to the neighborhood. I just bought the house there a couple months ago, and I was debating. I'm like, how do you deal with such a situation that could be touchy? You know, you don't want to deal with it in the wrong way, because you got to be neighbors with these people. You have to work with these people. You have to be able to... have a relationship with these people and not get them mad at you, because you really don't want to get in a war with your neighbor where you're always being you're being petty about everything else that somebody else does. And you know, who's to say that you're going to do everything that doesn't annoy people as well, and you know, they're willing to tolerate your stuff. So there has to be a balance between you being a good neighbor and them being a good neighbor. You shouldn't always have to be the one that has to take all this bad stuff, and then they do whatever they want without any care to anybody. And to be honest with you, they probably don't realize the dog barks all day long. And they probably don't realize it bothers anybody, because it is in the middle of the day and most people aren't necessarily there. So I've tried to think about ways to tactfully contact my neighbors and say, hey, look, you know, I don't know if there's something we could do differently with your... dog. If there's a way that we could get it so he doesn't bark as much, maybe you know, we could install a doggy door so he can freely go in and out of the garage or house to, you know, keep warm. You know, I don't know what it is that causes this dog to have these barking fits, but it can get really frustrating, like I said. And what I've noticed is that it's not necessarily every day. I think there may be a couple days where they don't put the dog outside because maybe they're around or whatever, and I'm assuming they only put the dog out when they leave the house. They probably don't want it inside while they're not there, which, you know, I could understand. You don't necessarily want the dog inside when you're not there, but, you know, maybe potty train the dog if that's the problem. So I've been thinking about tactful ways of approaching these people and telling them that this barking dog is really, really, really becoming fingernails on a chalkboard for me. But at the same time, like I said, you know, I've done things I know that have probably bothered my neighbors. And I would, I guess if I was in, you know, if I'm doing something to bother my neighbors, I want to know. That way I can try to resolve the problem rather than, you know, the neighbors getting more and more upset and then getting to the point where there's a boil over. So I would appreciate if somebody did, if I was bothering somebody, they'd come up and, you know, say something to me about it. So anyway, long story short, because I've already gotten it long, the people, as it turns out, are selling their house. So now I'm sort of in the position of, why bother? They're going to be selling the place. The dog will be gone soon, and the problem will be solved on its own without me having not had to actually deal with it. Maybe that's the best solution to this problem. Maybe I should just not say anything. You know, who knows? This house might take 3-4 months to sell, so I might still have to deal with it for 3-4 months. Is that acceptable to me? And I guess in my point of view right now it is, because I've decided not to say anything. You're listening to PES on KZUU 90.7 FM. We'll be right back. This is the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the Ivory Tower. Actually, no longer in the Ivory Tower of the Cub Mall. We are in the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. Bring your guitar, bring a friend, bring homework, or just kick back and listen. It's open mic night, Wednesday, at One Way Books from 8 to 11 p.m. One Way Books is located at 820 Colorado Street, next door to Delta Delta Delta. Open mic night is fun, fun, fun. The high school equivalency program at WSU welcomes volunteers to participate as tutors for adult GED students. Fluent Spanish speakers are especially needed. This is a wonderful opportunity to acquire teaching experience. Contact Priscilla Haste at 335-5652 or go to Cleveland Hall, rooms 21 through 23 for more information. Volunteers wanted. The Women's Transit is looking for drivers and dispatch volunteers. All volunteers will receive hands-on training. Cars and gas and insurance are provided. Receive academic credit while giving back to the community. To sign up, come by the Women's Resource Center at Wilson Hall, Room 8, or call 335-6849. Had a bad weekend? Need legal counseling? Student Legal Services is happy to help. Student Legal Services is a student-run organization that provides free legal advice to students. So if you need help, stop by their office and add Annex, room 305. They're open Monday through Thursday from 9 to 5 and Friday from 9 to 1 p.m. If you have any comments or questions or concerns, feel free to contact KZUU at 509-335-2207 or email gm@kzuu.org. Speaking Japanese, if you please. Learn Japanese for free. Everyone is welcome to join on the good times at Neil Public Library every Tuesday. Beginners can learn about Japanese culture and basic speaking and writing skills from 4 to 5 p.m. Intermediate students will focus on grammar and vocabulary from 5 to 5:45, and the advanced class with one-on-one teaching meets 5:45 to 6:30. Contact Kimi Hiroshi at 509-432-3903 or Neil Public Library at 334-3595 for more information. KZUU DJs, Republic Service announcements like what you just heard every hour. If your club or nonprofit organization wants us to read a PSA about you, come to our office in room 126B of Smith Gym or fill out a form online located under the staff button and email it to psa@kzuu.org. For more information, call 335-2208. If you want to get a hold of me in the studio, the number is 335-2207. On the web, it's www.kzuu.org. The show's website is www.thepes.com. And embarrassingly, I was at my website the other night, and, I need to update it again. It's been a while. Unfortunately, with the stream being down as much as it is, not being able to get the information out to people as timely as I'd like to, or even allowing them to hear the show, it's been frustrating. Well, we are going to go into one more bit of the Reverend Horton Heat. And I'd be throwing out the bat signal. Unfortunately, somebody left his pocket PC at home with the bat signal on it. So, na 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 na. And we are back. That was the Reverend Horton Heat, the favorite of the PES. Unfortunately, the bat signal just doesn't quite work as well when I do it. So, we also are supposed to be hearing from Jerry Lima of the Palouse Thunder. Don't know if he's going to be able to get it to us today, or we might have to wait till next week. I also know our very own Batman does from time to time get very busy, and he might be out saving Metropolis. It is Metropolis, right? The Batman does. I hope. Anyway, he might be out saving Metropolis. Is it? That seems like Superman. I don't know where Batman's from. Anyway, he's out saving whatever city he's from. How about this? We all know Batman's from Pullman. He's out saving the city of Pullman from the evil clutches of the evil. There's some evil group out there, trust me. And he's saving us from them currently as we speak. That's why he's not calling into the show. I know that for a fact, because otherwise he would be. In the meantime, we can go to his psychic, palooseatix.com, and we'll learn about all sorts of other good stuff. Oh, important. Important. I don't know. No, you know what? I'm going to hold off on this, but let me just say there's a hostage situation in the city of Pullman, and I'll get to that here in a little bit, but there's a hostage situation in the city of Pullman. We also have a situation where we want to be able to expand. We want the city to have a tax base that's able to support the city. We want to be able to buy things in the city of Pullman and not necessarily have to travel outside the city. Just as Republicans and Democrats both want what's best for the country, but we both have different views on what is best for the country, there's groups within the city of Pullman that want what's best for the city of Pullman, but we have different opinions of what is best for the city of Pullman. Some people believe that the 1950s thriving downtown approach is what's the best for the city of Pullman. Some people, on the other hand, believe what's best for the city of Pullman is to get with today, get with the lifestyle people have today, and start looking at those alternatives as a way of helping the city recoup some of its sales tax. I guess you could say there's groups of people right now that believe that our downtown is not thriving, that it's hurting, and it needs help. But it also seems like at the same time, people with subsets of those groups of people also will try to argue that if you move to this new view, maybe big box stores going into the edge of town or whatnot, that you'll hurt the downtown. So the question is, do we have a thriving downtown that will be hurt? Or do we have a dying downtown that's already hurt, that will be further hurt? Or do we have a downtown that's not going to be affected one way or the other due to the fact that there's not a lot of retail establishments in the area that will directly compete with these big box stores? So the question is, what's the situation? What are we fighting for? What are we not fighting for? Retail shopping, downtown Pullman. Let's think about this. I would love for somebody to tell me what retail shopping they do downtown Pullman on a weekly basis. You might do it on a semi-monthly basis, maybe a monthly basis, maybe a bi-monthly, or maybe once or twice a year you hit downtown because there's a specific thing you want in one of those stores. But on an average basis, what kind of shopping do you do downtown at retail businesses? There's a lot of... There's bars. There's... quite a few restaurants on Main Street and Grand Avenue. There's a lot of those opportunities. Maybe go see a movie, that you can do that downtown. Go to the coffee shops, get some ice cream from some of the vendors downtown. But what real retail do you do? I mean, how often do you go downtown and buy yourself, three pair of, dress socks? Or maybe you buy yourself half a dozen tube socks. But even so, how often do you really need to do that? How often do you need to venture downtown to do that kind of stuff? There's a jewelry store, but you don't buy a new ring every week. When you do make a purchase, it's great to go there. It's a nice location, a beautiful building, very helpful, friendly people. But you don't go there every day. The downtown, the main reason why people go downtown is because they're trying to get from one end of town to the other, and they have to go through it. Or they're going maybe to a restaurant or to a bar or to a coffee shop, or maybe they already work down there and there's some office buildings that they might work in or something like that. So is downtown truly thriving in the retail sector, or is that gone? And will new retail in Pullman be the answer? I believe that is the case. There is some retail downtown, no doubt about it. But the retail that is downtown, is that going to be hurt by big box stores moving to the edge of town? Currently, we have people who are willing to take a bus to Moscow to do grocery shopping. We have people who are willing to drive 8 miles to save some money by going to the stores over in Moscow because of sales taxes, or maybe just the simple fact that Moscow doesn't have to pay as much for their employees, so they're able to not charge you as much at the menu. maybe through a factor of all these things, people are saving a couple bucks by driving the 8 miles across the border. Even though some of these options, I mean, we do have a Shopko, and we do have the Rite Aid, and we do have a Radio Shack, and, you know, we have Safeway and Dismore. So we have several places where you can go buy, you know, many items that you're looking for. But people still choose to go to Moscow. I would guess that you'd probably have a really hard time trying to find certain hip clothing items that you might want to find the in styles, and you might actually have a hard time. Some people would argue you can't even find them over in Moscow. You got to go even to Spokane or you know, back over in Seattle or something like that to get the kind of clothing that certain people are looking for. But for the most part, there's probably not a ton of people that do their clothes shopping in Pullman currently. And I don't think necessarily our big box stores coming in are going to change that. I think you'd have to have clothing-specific type stores. I've heard some people say they'd love to see a Nordstrom's come to Pullman, and we'll see how that is. Just a second here. I'll get somebody on there and see what they have to say. All right. KZU, how are you doing? Hey, oh, you know what, guys? I got Batman on the phone. I'm debating if I should put him on the air now or not. I don't know. Okay, we'll go ahead and put you on the air. Just 1 second, Tom, right? Here we go. Okay, the great news, everybody, is I have Batman on the phone. I guess he did hear my bat signal, but he was debating whether he wanted to talk to me because, you know, I didn't have the real bat signal this time. Right, Tom?
Right.
I felt horrible. I was on my way here. I'm like, oh, geez, I forgot the bat signal. He's not going to be able to hear me. There's all these other problems I'm having. And I had a theorem last week, or last year, I should say, that the location of my parking space in relationship to the studio is directly proportional to the weather outside and the time I have left to get there.
Uh-huh.
For instance, when it's nice and warm and it's not a bad day to walk and I have like 45 minutes, I'll have a spot right in front of the studio. If there was this one day a couple weeks ago, it was like, you know, negative 73. It was snowing like 5 inches a second. You know, the wind's blowing about 183.7 miles an hour. And I had 45 seconds I'd be on the air. And, of course, the closest parking spot was way over by Stevenson, and I had to get over to Smith Gym. So, you know, that's just the way it is for me. So on my way here today, I had forgotten my my pocket PC, which has the bat signal on it. And I wasn't too far from home. I mean, granted, from home to the studio is only a couple-minute drive. But the problem was I knew that I was going to have some technical difficulties when I got to the station just because that's the way things are when I get here. I've been having a hard time recording the show so I could have it on the website for people to download and enjoy for years to come.
Yes.
And it's all been because, you know, the stream hasn't been very what's the word for it? Hasn't been very
reliable.
Thank you. That's the word I'm looking for. And so I've been trying to figure out a way to record the show otherwise. And I used to record it on a cassette tape, and then I'd go through and record it from the cassette tape onto the computer. It took hours. I'd get way behind. And so I need to record it directly to a digital format. So I brought my laptop in, and I figured what I would do is I would watch the stream. The stream's in the other room, and I'd have to get up and keep on going over there and looking at it. And I figured, well, if I have my laptop here, at least I could watch my laptop, and when it stops recording, I could run in there, fix the stream, come back, and continue recording. But then I was like, well, I'm still going to miss parts. You know, I'll be in the middle of something, it'll go out. And I couldn't get on the local wireless network anyhow, so then I was sort of hosed there anyway. So I'm scrambling. I'm digging through my bags, and I remembered that while I was doing announcing for the Evergreen Football League, their very first All-Star game ever, I was invited to be the PA announcer. And because the system that I use, I figured I better be prepared. So I brought a whole bunch of different kinds of connectors so I could connect my computer system to the stereo system. So I have like stereo headphone jacks out to RCA jacks, and, you know, I have on and on. And one of them is a stereo to stereo jack. So I figured, well, if I plug that into my headphone on the board, I could directly record it in the computer. So unfortunately, I figured that out and got that going within like 3 seconds of me going on the air. So I was scrambling around trying to do that. I had my guest on the telephone. Then we were having the telephone issues. Wait a minute. Are you talking to me?
No.
What in the... Okay. What's going on here? I can hear you. You can hear me.
Yes.
What? Okay. We couldn't get him on the air. We had to do this three-way call thing. I don't know if you heard the conversation or not, but I had this echo going on that was almost impossible to overcome in my head, on my headphones and stuff. And I was thinking
it was in your head, maybe.
Exactly. I realized when I said in my head, people were going to go like, "Yeah, it probably was in your head." Well. So I just realized that you're on the air, you're listening to me, I'm listening to you just fine, and it's going great. So I don't know, whatever the problem was, maybe. Are you on a landline or are you on a cell phone?
I'm on a landline.
Oh. You know, and when we had that problem back when you were in Mexico.
Yes.
You were on a cell phone, I'm assuming.
I was, yes.
And I've had this problem, too, and I've been on a cell phone. But I've also been on a cell phone without the problem. So I wonder if this might be a difference between a landline and a cell phone problem where it's not transmitting out to the cell phone correctly or something.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a weird one.
So, yeah, I'm going to have to try to run that down. But anyway, Tom, thank
you. I still go with the in-your-head theory because, you know, now that you've disclosed that the dog is constantly barking next door, I have some real concerns, you know, because I'm sure you remember David Berkowitz, you know, the son of Sam.
Oh, no.
Because, you know, if you remember, that's how he got started.
What?
It's because the neighbor's dog barked all the time.
Oh, no.
And he thought that was the devil talking to him.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, so, you know, for the younger listeners today who probably have no idea who the son of Sam is, he was a kind of a famous serial killer back in 1977 that went around shooting people on lovers' lanes in the head because the dog next door was barking and told him to do it. So just be forewarned, Pullman, that Scotty has already admitted that the dog is barking
the dog
all the
is
time.
Barking.
So when it starts telling you to go kill somebody, then we're in trouble.
Then it's true. Okay. I will try to – hopefully the dog moves before it gets to that point.
Yes. Just remember, you know, the word antifreeze comes to mind.
Oh, man. You know – Oh, Tom.
You could forget to leave an uncovered bowl of antifreeze laying in your yard. That is, I mean, that would be tragic, I know.
Dude.
But you were seeking solutions, Scotty, and so I was just trying to be helpful with some solutions. To your car heating problems, of course, not anything having to do with the dog.
Oh, yeah, of course, my car heating problem.
Right.
Okay. Great. Wow, remind me not to take my dog over to your house. So, what do we got today, Tom? Did you hear about this hostage situation in Pullman?
I did. It's been going on for a while. In fact, today is day 484. This has been going on longer than the Iranian hostage crisis was going on.
Wow.
So, yes, it's been since October 3rd of 2005 now that these appeals from PARD have been ongoing, and no end in sight, unfortunately. No hearing date has been set in the Third District Court of Appeals in Spokane, so the hostage crisis continues unabated with no end in sight. Total cost so far, in case I know you were going to ask me that, $966,785.16 in sales and property tax revenues that have cost us so far, in addition to $36,300.25 that it's cost the city of Pullman. So add all that together, and now we're looking at close to $1 million. In fact, if not over $1 million.
Yeah, it's just over $1 million.
That have been wasted on these appeals.
So
$1 million. Now we're talking some real money here.
I could imagine a lot of things that this area could do with $1 million.
Yeah, everybody was seemed to be very excited last year about the Arts Pavilion, the band shell at Sunnyside Park. I think $1 million would probably have covered most, if not all, the construction of the band shell at Sunnyside Park. So when people, you know, start advocating for the construction of the band shell, then perhaps they need to remember where a lot of the money that would have come to build that has been wasted on, and I do mean wasted in the biggest extreme of the word, or biggest meaning of the word.
Sorry, Tom. Sorry about that, Tom. I was trying to multitask there, and I didn't do a very good job.
That's always a bad idea.
It didn't work out very well. So, there's over $1 million. There's a lot of things that we could have done with that money, or that we could do with that money. I could think of the band shelter, like you were saying. There's always streets in the city of Pullman that could get some work.
Certainly.
You know, the library probably would love it.
Mm-hmm. The pool, the Parks and Rec Department,
right.
They've always wanted to put in a splash pool down at the Rainy Pool.
Yeah. Splash, splash, splash. No, actually, I was going to say the Aquatic Center, though. I guess there's been some issues there where they need to put some money into that.
Sure.
You did say about the splash pool or whatever. I don't know. I don't know why we want to I don't use the Rainy Park pool, so I can't really speak one way or the other. It just seems to me that when I was growing up, I preferred the pool versus the splash pool. I mean, because I was near the city of Renton. They used to have there's Liberty Park, and they had Henry Moses Pool. And it was a swimming pool, and outside of the swimming pool was like this little splash, you know, pool, wading pool type thing. It got up to like a foot deep at the deepest part, and there'd be like a little sprinkler thingy in there, and
yes.
You know, all the kids play in there, and because mm-hmm. it was so shallow on the hot days, it actually got warm. It was either that or all the little kids that didn't use the bathroom, one of the two,
right.
caused the warm water. I'm not sure which one, but, you know, and then Henry Moses Pool, that's where all us big kids went, and, you know, this is horrible. It used to cost like a quarter to go swimming, and I mean, that was really cheap, because there's other places we'd go, and it cost several bucks for a session. So Henry Moses Pool obviously was highly subsidized by the city and only cost people, you know, a quarter to go swimming or whatever it was. So, but that was where everybody wanted to go. You didn't want to go in the kid pool. You wanted to go in the big man pool, or the big boy pool. So I don't know. Maybe City Pullman's different. Maybe the pool's not getting utilized enough, and we have the one at the Aquatic Center. So maybe they don't see a need for having both of them. I'm not sure exactly the reasoning why they'd want to get rid of the pool. Or are they talking? Because that's my understanding. Is they talking about getting rid of the pool altogether? Or do you know a lot of that?
Well, no. They've just Parks and Rec has expressed for many years an interest in putting in a splash pool at the rainy pool. So.
And not get rid of the rainy pool?
No, not get rid of it. No. Just it would be an addition to the
okay.
rainy pool.
Okay. I swear to goodness, I was in the articles that I've read, they were talking about getting rid of the pool and replacing it with the splash pool.
Yeah, I've never read that.
Okay. So. Yeah, and that's where I was just like, no, I think that's dumb.
Yeah, I mean, that would be kind of silly, because, you know, there's an Olympic-sized lap pool there that a lot of adults use, and I think that would, you know, probably make a lot of people mad if they got rid of that. So.
Right, and that's what I was sort of thinking. So,
yeah.
So we have a 484-day-old hostage situation here in the city of Pullman that's holding up $1 million in tax revenues.
Basically.
Wow, that's incredible.
And no end in sight.
And
so
no
it could easily
end in
be
sight.
Another 484 days before, you know, this gets resolved. And you know, my thought of the day here before I go is if you go to Palousetix.com, you will see where I've kind of written about this. But since this is a college radio station, I thought we'd try to keep it kind of academic today. And I looked, I confirmed on the Griffin catalog for the Holland Library that it is on the shelf at Holland Library, should anyone be so inclined to check it out and perhaps maybe do a book report and get back to you next week. But I've read the book, and I highly recommend it. It's by an economist by the name of Friedrich Hayek, and H-A-Y-E-K. And he wrote a book. He wrote many. He's a Nobel Prize-winning economist, but he wrote several books. But perhaps the most famous book that he wrote was called The Road to Serfdom, and serfdom, of course, you know, being what people had in the Middle Ages. And his basic principle is this, and it's very applicable to the situation. You know, there's a big write-up in both the Moscow Pullman Daily News on Saturday and then the Lewiston Tribune on Sunday about various issues concerning growth on the Palouse, about the quarter. You know, there's a story about the quarter in the Daily News on Saturday, and then about Moscow and its growing pains in the Tribune on Sunday. And really, what Hayek said is very applicable to the issues that are going on right now. What his theory was, and I believe it's absolutely accurate, in a democracy, if you're going to have a democracy, which we claim to do, a democracy can only establish broad guidelines upon which everyone can agree. Okay, for example, I think everyone agrees that murder is wrong, so therefore we pass a law that says murder is wrong. Okay, and so you set this basic guidelines of societal behavior that everyone generally agrees upon. And because there are plenty of issues that everyone, the majority of individuals, agree upon. Okay? But in a democracy, people are not going to agree on every issue. And so therefore, he said, some things must be left to chance, because that's just the way it's got to be, because people can't agree on every issue, and therefore you got to leave some things to chance. So his contingency or his theory was that if you have a society where you have central planning, and our society rapidly is becoming a society of central planning. You know, we are rapidly, we've talked about this many times before, becoming the nanny state, okay? You know, where you can do or not do, or what you can eat or can't you eat, or where you can smoke or where you can't smoke, or where you can drink or you can't, you know, all of these personal things having to do with your personal life, the government is intervening in every aspect of society. So we've got central planning. And central planning, of course, applies to things like zoning. You know, we have people in town write letters all the time. You know, we saw one last week in the Daily News. Well, I think the Pullman City Council should decide what's a good corporation and a bad corporation.
Exactly.
See? That's what people want. People are advocating statism. They're advocating collectivism. They want the government to plan everything. They want the government to decide what stores will come and where they'll be located and how big they'll be and what products they'll sell and what prices they'll charge and what wages they'll pay their employees. I mean, that's central planning taken to the max, and there are plenty of people around here that are advocating that very thing. And what Hayek said was, when you have central planning like that, you can't have a consensus, you know, because people, you're not going to have a large majority opinion. And Walmart is a perfect example. You can't have something like central planning about Walmart, because there'll never be a consensus. You know, in our community, there is probably many different opinions about Walmart as there are people. You know, some people are for it, some people are against it, some people could care less, some people maybe don't feel strongly about it, but, you know, wish there was some other story. You know, there's all this variety of opinions. You can never have a large majority consensus about something like Walmart or any other store, probably, for that matter. As you were talking, you know, some people want Nordstrom, some people want Target, some people want Fred Meyer. You know, everyone has their own personal, you know, preferences when it comes to things like shopping, because shopping is basically a very personal thing. And according to Hayek, that's not something that a democratic government should be involving itself with. And inevitably, that type of central planning, since you can't have a consensus, it's the minority that usually ends up running things, because they are the voice that's they are the faction of all the different factions that's the most organized and the most vocal. And tell me we haven't seen that around here. We have a minority of people who are highly organized and very vocal, and they end up setting the agenda. And what Hayek said is, inevitably, when you have central planning like that in a democracy, it's incompatible with democracy, and it leads to the breakdown of democracy. And that's just what... That's my fear, especially when I look around the Palouse and see it, you know, when we've got all these people that are advocating central planning, and if that's what we head towards, you know, we're going to get to the point where we lose out on democracy in this region. So there's a lot more at stake in this fight than just money, unfortunately. A lot of our freedoms are at stake as well. A lot of democratic freedoms that we all supposedly cherish are at stake, and personal liberties.
And we've
talked. So check it out. It's a good book. Friedrich Hayek, The Road to Serfdom.
That's actually a great that sounds really good. I wish that people would read that. That sounds like something that would get people thinking, whether they would come to a conclusion where they would agree or disagree at the very end. It would be interesting to just, you know, open a dialogue about that. And, you know, like I was going into, you know, I don't necessarily believe that Pard wants to see Pullman fold and the town shrivel up and die. I think that they just have a different vision of how we can get to a thriving city of Pullman. And I do believe that there's some of them who don't want to see Pullman grow at all. They'd like to see a small town that has, you know, that's quaint, that's small, that doesn't have a lot of stuff going on. They sort of want to, it's like, this is my area, I don't want anybody else coming. You know, you sort of get territorial about it.
Right.
More people come, they take away from what you have. You know, you have parking, and more people come, they take that away. You have free-flowing streets, more people come, that goes away. And I think that some of these people might have this sort of territorial view that it's like, keep people out of here, we're fine how we are, stay away.
Sure. You know, I agree, and everyone certainly has a right to feel that way. You know, but the way I look at it is, you know, going back to what Hayek said, some things must be left to chance. You know, in a democracy, there are just many issues in which you will never achieve a consensus, and this is one of them. So this is not, according to him, an appropriate role of government. PARD is entitled to their opinion. Anyone who doesn't like Walmart is entitled to their opinion. They're entitled to express that opinion publicly. They are entitled to try to sway others over to their opinion. If they want to make their case that Walmart is evil and no one should shop there, that is their democratic right to do so. I have never disagreed with that. But where they are wrong is when they try to involve the government in the decision, and in particular by using the judicial branch indirectly making the government involved in the decision. Because ultimately, the decision about Walmart coming to Pullman is not going to be made by the free market. It's going to be made by three judges at a court in Spokane, and that is wrong, in my opinion. So, like I said, PARD members have a right not to shop at Walmart. They have a right to encourage others not to shop there. But let the free market decide whether Walmart opens or not, not the government. Because, like I said, once you go down the path of having the government make these decisions, then democracy starts to break down.
And we don't want democracy to break down here in America.
So, because democracy is the worst form of government, except for all the others.
Wow, that's I like that. Okay, well, that's actually a pretty profound thought for the day.
I didn't want to get too profound on you today, but I think occasionally I have to kind of mix things up a little bit and throw some deep philosophy and economics in there. So
I think that's good, especially here up at WSU on the college campus.
Absolutely.
On KZU 90.7 FM, the PES. Now, if you heard me talking earlier, you'll know what question is about. Well, you might have an idea of what question is going to come up, but I want to start asking people this, and I'm going to talk about this maybe in an upcoming show, but I want to sort of get a consensus and just a feeling about how people think about a certain subject. And what it is, do you believe, and this is, I guess this is an opinion question, is it okay for a group, whether it's public or private, to discriminate based on race?
I think I have a feeling I know what you're talking about.
Okay.
A certain op-ed piece that appeared in the Evergreen last week concerning the Congressional Black Caucus?
Sure did.
Okay.
Do you believe that it's okay for a group, public or private, to ever discriminate based on race?
No.
No. Okay. Do you think it's okay that a private group can choose its own membership regardless of those membership characteristics?
In 21st century America or in general?
In general, do you, Tom Forbes, Batman,
yes, I think it's okay that a private organization be allowed to set its own membership requirements? However, in 21st century America,
it's not okay.
No.
It's just by the standards
of our litigious society, no, it's not okay. As we've seen over and over again with the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts and the Elk River Redneck Men's Club, whatever the case is, if you are perceived as being discriminatory against a particular group, then you are putting yourself at legal risk.
Right. And that's, I guess, I obviously disagree with that for a lot of reasons, mainly because of the whole personal liberties. If you should have freedom of association.
Exactly. If you privately associate, I think you can choose whom you associate with regardless of any kind of EEO requirements.
Right. So it's interesting because obviously I think most people would agree that racial discrimination is never okay. But at the same time, I think a lot of people would agree that it's okay for a private group to decide who can and can't join based on any characteristic.
Yes.
So it's sort of interesting because if you do say we're only going to allow black people in the black caucus, technically you are discriminating racially.
Yeah.
But if you don't ask the question with racial discrimination and just say, can a private group make its own membership requirements – no matter what those requirements are, nobody's going to say no. But then all of a sudden you throw that whole word racial discrimination, boom, bells and whistles go off, and, you know, you're pre-programmed, you're mapped now to say racial discrimination, bad, racial discrimination, no.
Right.
You know, and so it's like, it's sort of funny, and I was... So I was planning on asking people those set of questions in that order. First asking if it's okay, public or private groups, to ever discriminate based on race. And I really think that I'm going to get a pretty high percentage of people. I bet there will be a couple out there.
I think most people morally believe that any kind of racial discrimination, even in a private group, is wrong, morally. Although, again, like you said, from personal liberty standpoints, in a private group, you can choose who you want to associate with.
Right.
And whether that's morally wrong or not, you know, there's a lot of poor moral decisions that people make about who they associate with, regardless of race or not. You know, people can associate with people that are bad for them to be around, you know, from a moral standpoint, but they still have the right to do so. I guess that's kind of the fine line between what's morally right and then what is right, as what your right as in terms of, like, liberty goes. You know, there's two different versions of right. There's right as in, you know, it's okay, and right as in you have the freedom to do it.
Yep. So it will be interesting to see what more people have to say. And you
yeah, my takeaway from that column was not so much the whole, you know, it's just again, how people persist in thinking that, I mean, the thing that I object to the most, you know, and the irony of the whole situation is, you know, that it's impossible for black people to be discriminatory.
Yeah.
You know, which is what the writer of the article is trying to make the point that,
correct.
Well, it isn't racism, because if you're a member of a racially oppressed group, then anything you choose to do then is okay. That's not racism. And that was the same excuse that was made here on the WSU campus with regards to John Stremus.
Right.
You know, it's like, well, by attacking white people who have not been racially discriminated against, then he wasn't making a racial comment, which I think is ridiculous, double talk. I mean, in my opinion, racism exists, but it exists on all levels of the color spectrum.
Right. You can hate somebody solely based on the color of their skin, no matter what color your skin is.
And just because you're a member of a minority doesn't somehow give you an exemption from being a racist.
Sure. So there we have it. Well, I've done some research on that topic. I found a lot of places that have articles about it, as well as
I'm looking forward to that. Should be interesting.
A little bit about the group itself and some of their mission statements or some of their founding statements, and how, really, if you look at it, this flies in the face of their, you know, one of their basic statements.
Yeah, because yet the congressman, even though he's white, represents a minority black district.
Right. And, you know, it's just sort of interesting, this whole thing that, you know, go to 1964 and reverse the races, you know, and people would have they would argue that, well, yeah, back then that's the way things were, because, you know, white people were mean and they were bad and they were racist and they were prejudiced against minorities, and that would happen. But you would think in 2006 something like that would not be looked upon positively.
Right.
And, you know, once again, you get into the whole arguments. Well, they are, you know, there is still issues with race relations and the power that minority groups have within politics in America, and having a group that of politicians who can get together and discuss and work on some of these issues, there's still a need for that, you could argue. But the question is, are we fixing the issues that the people you represent are having? Are you fixing the issues of all people of one race are having? Is it possible or impossible that somebody of another race could understand or contribute to such discussions and such things to maybe help make things better?
Yeah, it's just sad. I mean, I think on both sides of the issue, you know, on all sides of the issue, you know, we just really need to move beyond color and race. You know, we just, from all standpoints, we just need to look at everyone now in terms of just being people instead of races.
I would like to agree with that. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people that don't think that's possible.
No, there are still some people, I think, that are stuck in the past, you know, like I said, on both sides of the issue. And it's unfortunate. And you'd think that, you know, in the year 2007 that we could move beyond it, but, you know, every time we continue to to focus on it, and in whichever way, it holds us back that much further, I think, of just, you know, like I said, being able to look at people as being people and leaving it at that.
Mm-hmm. Very good. All right, Tom, I appreciate the call. I'll let you get back to work.
Yep.
I'm going to actually have to get going here in a couple minutes myself because the show is darn near to an end. Once again, Tom Forbes, Batman. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. All right,
bye. All righty. There you hear it. That was really good. I like what he said about the article written by Augustus von Hayes, Friedrich, The Road to Serfdom. I've talked about sort of similar kind of concepts before. The people look to the government for everything, and the government's trying to get it that way. And the more that people depend on the government to do the stuff for them, the more power the government has, the less power the people have. And government traditionally does not give power back to the people. They take and they take and they take. And if you think about it, for the last 231 years, coming up on 231 years, we've been having groups of people that we elect go and represent us. And every year they're making new laws, they're making new rules, they're making new everything. And you can't believe that every time a new rule and a new law or new anything is made, that it's protecting and expanding on your freedoms. Me, everybody else, were essentially as free as we were ever going to be when the Constitution's being written, as the government then understood. The government exists because we say it can exist. It doesn't exist because it exists. It doesn't exist because it's been around for 200 years. It exists because a group of people got together and says, yes, you know, a government's a good idea because anarchy is not going to solve many problems. People will not be able to common things will not be accomplished. You know, you can't protect the fort with an anarchy because nobody's going to be working together to achieve those goals. You cannot achieve of infrastructure of any value without some sort of government working to do this. So, and just the whole idea that, you know, we have to have some sort of way that as a community we work together, we have some rules to follow, that we have consequences for not following those rules that everybody agrees that we all should be following. Well, the problem is that as this government grows, as we go along in years, we keep on adding more and more things. And the funny thing about it is, as we talk about this whole idea of minority groups, and not minority as in racial minority, but minority as in a small group of people with an issue at hand that they want taken care of, they'll go up with the government, they'll find their senator, and they'll try to make this an issue. And in a lot of cases, many of these things are sort of token issues to them. It's one of those things where it's like, well, it's not really going to cost the government any money, which they don't really necessarily care if, they do taxes and whatnot, but they don't necessarily want to take money out of the budget from one of their pet projects and give it to you. So if it's not going to cost them much money, and you know, it's not, you know, and it's a really feel good issue and everybody can sign on to it and show that they care and that's what really matters, get a couple photo ops, by all means, some of these issues are going to come through. And you see this all the time in specialty legislation. I call them designer laws at times. There are special laws that are made that try to deal with a very specific incident or circumstance, and they try to outlaw that circumstance or that incident, or they try to outlaw something that was the spawn of such incident or something that spawned an incident to happen. And the problem is that when you try to outlaw a very specific thing, there is so many variables that inevitably the law is pretty much worthless, or it's gotten around, or worse, it has unintended side effects, and those are the worst. The fact that the law is made, you're restricting people and their liberties, their freedoms, every time you're making a law that says you cannot do something. The nanny state, Tom said it, the nanny state. We keep on adding laws. You can't do this. You can't do that. You can't smoke here. You can't smoke there. You can't have trans fats in your foods. You've got to, you can't punish your kids with a spanking with in public view because people are calling the police on you left and right. And you cannot you can't go somewhere and not wear your seatbelt in your car without fear of retribution of a ticket. It just goes on and on and on. Yeah, a lot of those things are good. A lot of things like, yeah, don't eat trans fats, bad for you. Stop smoking, bad for you. Don't go to bars when people are smoking inside, bad for you. Don't drink and drive, bad for you. Wear your seatbelt, otherwise you'll get thrown out of the car and roll over and die. Hey, good idea. But is it the government's role to be telling me this stuff? Or is it my role to live my life and the government's role to create an infrastructure that is for the common good of all people? And at what point is the government's role to stop? We can get into a slippery slope where we continuously say, well, if the government does this, why don't we go one half step further and have them do this as well? And go on and on and on and get in a slippery slope. But we have to at one point say, no, that's enough. The government has done enough. The government is there for the infrastructure. The government is there to have common things for the rest of the people to use in order to work in the society. And in the city of Pullman, getting back to an idea that I had earlier, the city of Pullman has groups of people that all think they know what is best for the city of Pullman. Whether they're right or wrong depends on where you stand. If you think that a thriving downtown is the way to go, then you're going to agree with groups such as PARD that believe that large big box stores are not good for the society and not good for Pullman, and it would be best if we allowed our downtown to thrive on its own. And on the other side of the aisle, if you believe maybe with the people who – oh, man. If you believe, say, with the group BREO, Business and Residents for Economic Opportunities, the idea is that all – that we should welcome business, that we should that private rights and private property rights are paramount to society. That if I own a piece of land and I'm properly legally zoned, I should not be stopped from using my land as it is zoned. Even if other people have moved in since then and said, well, now that I am here, I don't want you doing with your land what you're zoned to be able to do. Even though I moved in knowing that that property next door to me was zoned for such items, I'm now going to try to stop you. You have people that believe, no, it's zoned for that. That's the way it needs to be. Now, there's the other side of things as well, where you have, say, an area that's not zoned for something like up on College Hill. There's a lot of houses up there, and there's a situation, I believe it was Maple Street, where a house the owners wanted, they owned a couple lots right next to one another. They wanted to essentially tear down the house that was dilapidated on that property and rebuild apartments. Problem is that it wasn't zoned for such a thing, so they tried to go to the city of Pullman and get rezoned. Now, that is a place where the neighbors and everybody, I think, very much has a say, because that directly affects everybody around that. That would affect their private property immensely, because when I came in, it's zoned for this. It's zoned for houses. I came in expecting to live in a neighborhood of houses. If you change this to apartments and high-density housing, all of a sudden, my house is next to apartments with high-density housing. I will lose property value theoretically, because now my house is next to a whole bunch of apartments versus next to a whole bunch of other houses that are in my neighborhood. When somebody else goes to buy my house, they're not going to necessarily want to live next to an apartment. They want to live next to other single family housing. So I'm going to possibly lose some property value. And because of that, and because of the additional traffic on my residential street, because of the additional possible parking problems, because of the noise, because of everything else, I don't want apartments put into this area. By all means, that's your right as a property owner, that zoning changes in your area should be talked about. But if you go in knowing full well what the zonings are of the areas around you, you should not you can say, I don't like this, but you should not be able to stop somebody from using their private property for years and years and years, which is what is happening right now. So there's an article that was in the paper. Colfax and Pullman both are seeing some non-traditional housing things going underway. Businesses in the downtown area, a lot of them have second and third floors. Many of these floors for years have been used as storage or just underutilized. And developers are realizing now that there's opportunities to put in condominiums or housing in those areas that people are interested in getting a hold of and using. So in Pullman, we see it where the old Square One Antique Mall was, at the intersection of Grand and Main. They are putting in upstairs, they're putting in several apartments, anywhere from three-bedroom down to one-bedroom. They're going to be right downtown. You're going to have, you know, central downtown living. You'll be able to walk to all the things in the downtown. The lower floor will be businesses. Colfax is seeing some of this kind of stuff happen with places in Colfax, and they're hoping that will help some of the downtown area with people living there and being able to walk to work or whatever else. So they're hoping that they'll see their community expand a little bit, or at least stop contracting, which it's been doing pretty badly in Colfax. And then even downtown Pullman, we talked about this earlier. What's good for downtown Pullman? Do we want a thriving downtown with tons of retail, or do we or are we happy with what we have? And I would first off argue that, hey, yeah, it'd be great to have a thriving retail downtown. It'd be great to have thriving retail throughout the city. It'd be great for all those things. The problem, though, is we're not going to have that for the simple fact that the whole concept of where retail is going today. Retail is going to the big stores. Retail is going to multi-stored locations like malls, and then the ones that come in want to be located around that. The thing that I think where somebody had said it would be awesome if we had a Nordstrom's in the area, I think Nordstrom's all by itself would have a little bit of a problem locating in downtown Pullman solely based on the fact that it would be a huge building in downtown Pullman, which would either mean demolishing some of the buildings that are there to rebuild, or to make a smaller store. Parking would be tremendously hard to deal with unless you were to put up a parking garage of some sort. Plus, I think the same argument that's being made for not having a Walmart in town would be made for not having a Nordstrom's downtown Pullman, because it would be too big for the character of the neighborhood. And that's just going by other people's arguments. Me, on the other hand, I'm like, hey, if you want to build it, go ahead. Your property, you can do it. Well, anyway, Nordstrom's most likely would want to be out at the mall, because there's other clothing stores, there's other shopping venues out there, and people are making a destination out of it. And that's what a lot of these big stores want. They want that destination feel. They don't want to be out at the end of some road all by themselves. They want to be next to all these other stores. You're going to see Bishop Boulevard growing even more once that Walmart goes in. I mean, we already have Ace Hardware going in right between the Zeppos and Jiffy Lube. Their ground has already been broken, and Remax is going to be going in there. They're currently located in the old Starbucks on East Main, but they're going to be moving out of there to their new location. Pullman Moscow Building Supply is putting in a 140,000 square foot building. Or at least their area is going to be 140,000 square feet. I'm not sure if it's just the building or if it's the whole lumber yard included. And that's going to be on the parcel of property between the Walmart parcel and the old Safeway building. So you're going to have a lot of big businesses out there. And next week when Glenn's on the show, I asked him last year when he was on the show about the future growth areas of Pullman, and it's been a year, and we'll have another chance to chat about that kind of thing and see where our future growth area is, because you take a look at Bishop Boulevard, there's not a lot of places left. I mean, we're starting to get pretty full down there, and I believe there's a lot more retail that's going to come. One of the ideas was going further south on Grand Avenue with the idea of the South Bypass, which would essentially be a major road that went around the city of Pullman to the 270 highway, which is the Pullman-Moscow Highway, to 195. So we have that, and there might be the possibility for businesses around that. And there's just more town, there's more area south of Pullman on near the Ford dealership and on up to where the Walmart proposed location is, that could be built up and additional retail put in. Now, you might think that the north side of town, I would love to see them build up retail on the north side of town, because I, for one, hate driving all the way across town, because, you know, it is a good 7 or 10 minute drive, depending on how bad traffic is that day. Well, anyway, my time is more than up, And you've been listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM.